Hi, I'm Alex Drummond, executive editor for Metro Magazine, and welcome back to Metrospectives. My guest today is Jared Schneider, senior director, bus initiative lead at CalSTART. Today, Jared joins me to talk about the road to zero emissions in public transit, what it is CalSTART does to help transit agencies succeed in their goals to go zero emissions, and what the future may hold. It's a really interesting conversation. Thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoy it. Great. Jared, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm really good, Alex. Thanks so much for having me here.
Yeah, no problem. Just so people know, we kind of did a home and home. I joined your podcast to kind of talk about the journalism perspective of zero emissions and other things and what Metro does. So I wanted to throw it to you. Can you talk a little bit about CalSTART and what it is you guys do and talk a little bit about the podcast I was just on?
Yeah, absolutely. So CalSTART's been around for 30 years, not quite as long as Metro Magazine, which you guys, I think, are well over 100 at this point. And we really are focused on the transition to zero emission. We work in bus, truck, light duty, clean fuels and infrastructure, and innovative mobility. So we do a lot of work helping fleets adopt zero emission vehicles, which that could be anything from the planning, the procurement, the deployment of vehicles, helping with the project management. And then on our programmatic side, we also administer a number of voucher incentive programs. We support the New York Truck Voucher Incentive Program. We administer the HVIP program out in California, the Energize program, and a lot of different administrations of funding across the spectrum. And one of the great parts about that is it gives us a lot of insight and information on how best to help the industry in general in whatever area we're focused on. So for me, I run the bus team, and we have a couple different sides of the bus team. So we have our transit side, our school bus side, and then also a demonstration team that develops a lot of our tools and a lot of the things that are utilized for deploying zero emission buses. So that's, you know, a little bit about us, but we are national. So unlike the name that says CalSTART, we are headquartered in Pasadena, but we have offices all across the country in Colorado, Michigan, New York. I'm based out of our Florida office, and we actually have an office overseas as well in Portugal. I could be wrong on that one. So don't hold me to that one, but we do have an office internationally. So we really do focus on the country as a whole, and we aren't all just California based. Like I said, that tends to be the question we always get is, you know, what do you guys do outside of California, or is it just California? I'm like, there's a lot of us outside. So,
right. And can you talk about the podcast? I think there's an interesting story there as far as how you developed it and how it's funded and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So we looked at the industry. So we work a lot with the FTA, and one of the rounds of funding that we received from them, we said, you know, we're trying to address zero emission barriers. What are the barriers to adoption for transit agencies? And one of the areas we identified was that there wasn't really a long form kind of living ability to get information out into the world. Usually it's around webinars. We speak on webinars all the time. I mean, you and I, I'm sure, moderate all the time. Like, mm-hmm. This is just normal. We host them. The problem with a webinar is if you're not on it, you may get a recording. It's hard to get people to listen to them afterwards. So it really becomes this one-off thing with great information that doesn't have the kind of the longevity that you would like to see out of it. And then the same thing with going to conferences. There are so many great speakers, but if you're not there, it doesn't matter how great they are because you don't get the information. You may get somebody telling you about how great the information was. You may get a slide deck, but you don't get all the nuances and all of the kind of more discussion around it and really kind of the nuggets of information that you may not be able to get out of just a you know, getting it secondhand from someone else. So we really felt that a podcast, which is called Transition to Zero, was the right way to go about this, because it's a chance to actually create this longer narrative around zero emission buses and how this transition goes. So we interviewed where we interview DOTs from around the country and the role that they play in transitioning their state and working with their transit agencies. We've interviewed manufacturers on the state of the industry, where they think it's going. We've interviewed transit agencies, what they're doing, the struggles that they're seeing, and how they're addressing them, as well as different organizations, Metro Magazine, of course, interviewing you about the role of media. And all of these things really combine into this great ecosystem of all of us trying to figure out how best to address this zero emission transition, because it's happening. Whether you want to admit it or not, this is going on. And you can see it in the amount of funding, where it's going, what the priorities are, not just of the administration, but of a lot of the transit agencies across the country. So this is happening regardless. And so this is, we want to make sure that there's a way to help people transition in a effective and I guess the smoothest manner possible.
With that, I mean, kind of the trends you're seeing then, I think we're seeing a larger scale kind of ramping up of zero emission buses as opposed to 5-3-5 buses at a time. But please tell me your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So we conduct an annual survey of the industry and take an inventory of zero emission buses in the transit market. It's called Zeroing In on ZEBs. You can find it at our website at calstart.org, you'll see it referenced everywhere online. It's the industry standard when it comes to looking at the trends in zero emission buses. And what we're seeing year over year is this exponential growth. Obviously, that is fueled by the amount of funding that is coming in. But we are now seeing something that we haven't really seen before, which is more vehicles, or I guess a larger percentage of vehicles being purchased without kind of the low-no funding, and instead utilizing state funding, or you know, maybe VW mitigation funds that may still be around. We have in California the Hybrid Voucher Incentive Program, which I know I butchered that. It's a much longer name, but it's HVIP. And just watching the way that the state funding is going to be leveraged for the federal side is really exciting to see, because you are seeing this this growing movement of zero emission buses. And being in, you know, you're in California, you know about the innovative clean transit rule. So they have to move, all of our transit agencies there have to move to zero emission. I think if I remember correctly, 2030 for large agencies, 2040 for smaller agencies. And that transition is taking place, but then you're seeing it in other areas as well. So looking at the growth in the market has been really exciting, and it's not just in battery electric, it's also in the hydrogen fuel cell side. So a lot of this work that's being done is, and you're seeing people kind of scale up. And as you're seeing the scale, you're seeing different issues crop up that may not have happened when we have one or two buses. We're past the pilot stage, we're past the demonstration stage of zero emission buses. That's something we are very adamant about, and you see it. It's no longer, let's do a science fair project, put one bus out there, and 4 years later, we're gonna buy a new one. That it doesn't even happen anymore, or it shouldn't happen. The FTA is really kind of focused on larger deployments, because we do have to get to scale. And right, getting to scale creates more issues, more, you know, more challenges to overcome. But you're never going to know that if you're just doing it one at a time. I mean, it's going to be 100 years down the road, and we're going to have half the trans agencies have half their fleets if we do it at that pace. So we do see a lot more, I guess, investment in larger vehicle procurements. And just to pivot a little bit, just to show you kind of where the administration is going on the other side of this, on the school bus side. The most recent round, the Clean School Bus funding, I believe, is calling out that you have to apply for a minimum of 15 buses. That's not something we had seen on the transit side. I wouldn't be surprised if we start moving towards that. We wholeheartedly believe that there need to be larger procurements, and that doesn't mean that one agency has to get 100 buses today. Now, if you're, you know, New York MTA or Chicago, yes, you can do that. If you're a small, small agency in rural Ohio, you may not be able to have that capability to do that. So what we've always been advocating for is working with the DOTs to have consolidated applications across the state. So there may be a procurement of 50 to 100 buses but that may be 20 different transit agencies and each one of them getting smaller deployments, but it's getting them ready for the larger deployments.
Right. And as I mean, because there are some agencies that are scaling and there are a couple of agencies at least that are scaled. What kind of lessons are you seeing learned from that could be shared with the industry?
Now, I think the industry talking point is always talk to your utility. And this is, it can't be harped on enough, but I will say this. Having worked with agencies going to scale, talking with your utility is the first step, but that doesn't mean it solves the problem. And so what we are seeing in terms of like best practices is not just telling your utility, I'm going to get 5 buses in the next 2 years. What we need to start doing as an industry is as you're planning out for a zero emission transition, don't plan for 2 years, don't plan for 5 years, plan for your entire fleet. You may not ever get there, but you have to plan for that now so you can talk to your utility that maybe next year you need, you know, whatever it is, like 2 megawatts of power on your site and they scale up to 2 megawatts of power, but you didn't tell them, yeah, in 4 years, I'm gonna need 4 megawatts of power. And so they did all this work and they could easily have just done the additional work right then to plan for it. So what we found, like I said, is not just talking to your utility, but doing a full plan. And once you have that full plan, you can show your utility, look, over the next 15 years, if we go all the way here, here's what we're going to be looking at each stage, at each transition of our fleet. So at 10% of our fleet, at 20, 30, and 40% of our fleet, here's what it's going to look like. Here's how much power we're going to need so that the utility can then come back and say, all right, here's what you have today. And here's what we can do realistically in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, whatever that may be. It's again, once you go to scale, you start seeing these problems, or I guess kind of these best practices cropping up. That's really one of the biggest things we've seen is that lead times to get power onto facilities or onto bus lots, it's not as easy as saying, calling up your utility and say, hey, I need 10 megawatts of power in the next 2 years. And they're going to be like, congratulations. I don't know how you're going to do that. You know, and so there's that part. And then also the scalability, looking at the resiliency factor. I'm based in Florida. We have hurricanes. It's hurricane season now, just started a few days ago. And I have been through hurricanes. I used to own my own non-emergency medical transportation company, operated through Hurricane Michael in Panama City. So I have firsthand knowledge of how this stuff works. And resiliency is first and foremost on my mind when I'm working with transit agencies, no matter where they are, because right. Now you're planning different. You know, when the power goes out, yet your diesel pumps stop working, so you have to go out there and pump them by hand. That's not fun, but you can still do it. But if the grid's down, now what are you going to do? And so really looking at kind of backups, looking at installing microgrids, what does that entail? How do the policies work around that? All of these things are, you know, I don't want to overwhelm anybody with this because it's a lot. But it is things that people need to be aware of, because we don't ever want to see somebody put vehicles out there that it is an unsuccessful deployment, no matter what kind of technology it is. You want to have successful deployments because we are all working in the same space, trying to achieve, you know, the same goals. We're all moving in that direction. So let's try and figure out how we can get there in the most effective and efficient way possible.
Right. It's rare that someone who was tedious with the project didn't succeed, I would say.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
and you know, I think we talked a little bit about on your podcast about the idea, the role of other alternative fuels and not only just going zero emissions, but lowering emissions. You know, what kind of trends are you seeing there and what kind of things are you seeing where that could be a benefit for agencies to investigate that don't necessarily have the onus on having to go zero emissions?
CalSTAR, we used to be kind of the big tent. Bring everyone in, alternative fuels, bring everyone in, happy to work with you. And we have pivoted away from that simply because we realized there you could not achieve the climate goals that we have as like global initiatives to make those strides. We couldn't continue to promote and work with bridge technologies. Eventually, a bridge technology becomes a dam. And that was an area that we had to pivot away from. And there were some people that were upset with us. There are roles for these technologies. So I don't want to say there's not. I do think that if someone is not already invested into like propane infrastructure, CNG infrastructure, the idea of doing it now, to me, does not make any sense, because now you're talking about installing something that will most likely be obsolete within the next 5 to 10 years. You'll have sunk costs in infrastructure. You're going to have training expenses to train your people up on an antiquated technology that is not going to benefit them from a workforce perspective in the future. Now, that said, if you already have that technology, that there is nothing wrong with continuing moving forward with it, with your CNG technology, propane, whatever it may be. That's fine. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't be utilizing those technologies, because right now, if everyone that has CNG buses and propane buses turned around and said, you know what, we're just buying zero emission, that's all we want, there's no chance that production keeps up with it. So we're going to have to keep moving out and looking at how we can keep addressing and driving down emissions until we can get to that zero emission space. And I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody right now. One thing I would say is that, I mean, don't ever bet against America. I'm not kidding. We are going to win in building materials, in battery technology. We are going to win in a lot of different areas, in microchips, most likely. We are moving that manufacturing back here. This technology continues to exceed expectations. And so the idea that in 5 years, a battery electric bus would not be able to meet 90% of the routes in the country just doesn't really make sense if you look at the numbers. We have, our material sciences looking at solid state batteries. You're talking about the densities that are, you know, 4 times more dense than what we currently have for batteries the same size. That is going to change the way that not only our vehicles are operated, but also our infrastructure is going to be taxed. So, and by taxed, I mean the actual demand put upon our infrastructure. There are a lot of things coming forward and a lot of things coming up that I think it would be not the best use of taxpayer funding to move into a propane or CNG or even battery electric hybrid right now scenario with the way that technology is moving. I don't see the long-term benefit by investing into that now if you have not already done it, with the exception of maybe hybrids. And I say that because hybrid technology does help your workforce to train up on the electric side, that when you do move into the zero emission space, that your workforce will already have a familiarity with high voltage, will know how to read schematics. And I think that there is a role for that, but you know, I look at the way that our nation's going, the opportunity that we have from a workforce perspective, that if we are not investing into our local communities and bringing this technology to them, we're creating an entire system where we'll have people that have skills that are no longer relevant in society from a transportation standpoint, which is one of the exciting parts on the bus side, is that if you are trained in transit agencies won't really like this, but if you are trained in the technology on how to work on a zero emission bus, that training can go over to trucking. It can go over to light duty vehicles. It can go into working on the infrastructure. It's a transferable skill that you now have if you are looking to move about the industry. But if you are, again, focused on technologies that no longer play a role in transportation, your opportunities, you're limiting yourself at that point.
Right. You're right, by the way. Transit doesn't like that. Stay in public transit if you're working in public transit. We need
And I get it. I agree. I agree with that 100%. But I do think that we need to acknowledge that the demand for these jobs in all sectors is something that is real and it's needed. So I don't think it helps for us to shy away from it, but we should acknowledge the fact that it is there.
Right. And I was going to ask you about the viability of large scale zero emissions kind of going across the country. You mentioned steps are okay. You know, we don't have to all get there in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Ideally, you know, what would be the kind of the ultimate goal to go zero emissions nationwide with transit specifically?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because you're looking in the future and trying to figure out where the technology is going to go and what's going to emerge in terms of technologies. And is it going to be hydrogen? Is it going to be battery electric? Is it going to be something that we aren't even, it's not even on the radar yet? I'm not really sure. I think the limiting factor more than anything is going to be our infrastructure and where that's going to go. So if it is hydrogen that maybe it's more of a fuel cell dominant technology that we may see for vehicles that have longer ranges, that may be great. But if we don't have the hydrogen fueling infrastructure in place and hydrogen ends up still being as expensive as it has been comparative to other fuels, it's not going to be a dominant force. And so we're going to have to see the infrastructure built out, and it won't just, and same thing with battery electric. I do think there are new technologies that are coming online that we're very bullish on being implemented within the actual ecosystem of transit. But beyond transit, like I said, we work in trucking, off-road, innovative mobility. And when you start looking at this from an ecosystem perspective, your transit agency no longer becomes the zero emission bus transit agency. It becomes a transit agency within a zero emission ecosystem. And that's the way I think we have to change our mindset around looking at transit being the only one. Transit's the first in almost everything when it comes to transportation. Yeah. Technologies are piloted in this. The first hybrid electric bus was piloted by CalSTART years ago. The first zero emission or electric school bus was piloted by CalSTART. The first hydrogen fuel cell bus, I mean, by CalSTART. We've been doing this for so long, but it all starts in transit and then moves its way as it gets commercialized into the trucking sector, which is, in terms of an emissions perspective, is a much larger contributor to overall emissions. So we look at transit as kind of twofold. One, it is the edge of everything. It is out there in front of everything, helping to commercialize technologies, but also looking at the infrastructure, it becomes the backbone that everything, I guess, I don't want to say rests upon, but it starts there. And right. So you really do see a permeation of the technology within cities themselves. And then you're talking about cross country and how all of this is done. So once you have trucking set up and you have to start electrifying highways and whatever else it is, or hydrogen stations on highways, all of that kind of starts at the hubs, which are your cities, your towns that they're rolling through, and having that infrastructure set up, looking at from an entire ecosystem perspective, that's the only way that we can do it, because it will never be a, you know, this one person does their thing and they go to 100% emission, so everyone else does it. It's got to be an ecosystem approach.
Right. And there's a lot of talk about hydrogen and you know, I've always felt like transit agencies, you know, the transitions have always gone like, you know, here's the mass movement to CNG, here's the mass movement to hybrid electric. What should we make of electric buses kind of having hydrogen fuel cell kind of in its rearview mirror as far as people, transit agencies embracing electric buses as a solution when there's, you know, it's kind of like that meme where like someone's looking back and there's hydrogen fuel cell right there. You know, how do you kind of let transit agencies know that it's okay to kind of move forward with electric and there's still other options that could be down the road?
Yeah, on that side, we always look at it from a mixed fleet. There's nothing wrong with that. If it's hydrogen or battery electric, you know, a mix of both, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I love the competition personally, because I think that's what's going to drive all the technology. If we said, all right, at current battery electric technology, that's good enough and no one's going to top that. Well, if that was the case, we would be stuck right here where battery electric is not going to meet the needs of, you know, all the transit agencies. That's why having hydrogen in that mix and looking at it from an overall perspective of a transit agency is very important. When we do fleet transformation planning and we do hundreds of these across the country, when we do them, we always ask the transit agency, what is it that you want to do? You know, what do you want to look at a mix? And if you want to look at a mix, great. And if not, here's the battery electric option for all your routes. these are the routes that won't make it. So you have different options. So we lay those out. I think it's important to have those, to have those discussions and to look at the technology as it, rather than looking at it as, oh my gosh, something's coming up behind us, saying, all right, this is pushing everyone forward. And that's the way it should be. I mean, that's honestly the way that like propane and CNG, if they can come up with different alternatives and different solutions to push everyone forward, that's exactly how our country was founded. I mean, it is on competition, it's on innovation, and that doesn't happen if everyone rests on their laurels and said, well, we did the best we could.
So, you know, I guess lastly, and with that said, is there something in the wings, some kind of innovation? Are we finally going to get the Jetsons kind of flying cars? You know, what is there anything in kind of the long way, long view that's coming up behind electric buses and hydrogen?
Right now, I don't think that it's going to be a different fuel type. I think it's going to be material sciences that are going to make the leap. Like I said, with solid state batteries, I think that will actually revolutionize, or I don't want to say revolutionize, we're already in this revolutionary period. I think that will solidify the zero emission space once we get to that part, because you see it in Europe, you see it in other countries around the world. Manufacturers are stopping with any production of diesel or gasoline powered vehicles. They said it just doesn't make sense. They are going all in. And the reason that they're doing that is they saw a tipping point in their countries. I think we are getting closer and closer to that, to where I always say it's like you break the machine. You break the machine so bad that you can't go backwards. And that really is where we're getting to. And once you hit those solid state batteries where the density is enough that you can either reduce battery size or you can keep the same battery size that you have and be able to meet every single route that you have, they're lighter, they're non-combustible, all of these things that start going into this, you no longer have a reason to hold back. And that is where I think this administration has gone. That is where future administrations, no matter who it is in the White House, I don't see the genie going back into the bottle at this point, because funding has steadily increased year over year through administrations, whether like no matter who's in the White House, this funding continues to increase. And so I don't see that stopping. I do think once we hit those solid state batteries, it changes. And that doesn't mean it'll only be battery electric. That may mean that you see more dense batteries being utilized with hydrogen fuel cells. And that's another way to go about this. I don't think that there is a winner loser in this in terms of the technologies. I think that the only way that it should be looked at is that we as a nation win by moving in this direction.
Right. Well, great. Thanks for your time, Jared. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely, Alex. Thank you so much.